From the secrets we keep to the lies we tell ourselves, get ready to challenge the status quo and dare to ask the questions others are too afraid to ask. Welcome to the Francesca Luca Show. Join Francesca as she ignites a meaningful conversation about things that really matter. Buckle up and get real. Now, to give you something to talk about all week long, here's Francesca.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. Have a really interesting show tonight, so I'm anxious to jump right in. So what does it mean to be truly yourself when the world around you says not to be? We're joined by Garrett Glaser, a respected journalist who spent 3 decades in front of the camera and made history as the first local TV news correspondent to come out on air. His new memoir, Fairy Boy, gives us a rare and honest look at what it was like to grow up gay in New York City before the Stonewall riots. It's a coming-of-age story, a media story, and a powerful reminder of how visibility can change lives. From celebrity interviews and breaking news to personal milestones and cultural shifts, Garrett's seen it all. And tonight, he's going to share with me what it's meant to live openly, speak honestly, and stay true to yourself at every step of the way. So if you're interested in stories of courage and identity and what it takes to make history, this one's for you. So big welcome to you, Garrett. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Francesca, for doing this, for spending some time talking to me. I feel like my new memoir has something good to say, and that is if you trust yourself and believe in yourself, even at a young age, if you like yourself, I think you will have an easier time in the world. And I found most people accepting, even in the 60s, because if you're comfortable with yourself, they pick up on that.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. And actually, once you you realized that you were gay, it was like you came out almost immediately, didn't you?
Yeah, it's so funny. I said to my mom and sister and a dinner guest one night when I was, 14, I said, look, I got to tell you something. I'm gay, and I'm just the way, that's how I am, and I can't really change. This is me. So my mom said, well, you're going to a psychiatrist right now, young man. And, you know, that she thought you must be mentally ill. That's what people thought back then.
Yeah, so, I think there is probably, isn't there some movie out on Netflix about just that, about a boy who I don't know the name of it, but I think I saw it. I kind of scrolled by it.
The world has changed so much. Mm. And sometimes I get frustrated with young gay kids today who don't realize how much better things are today. Night and day. Even with all the crazy stuff going on now, just the fact that you can get married, you can say to someone, I'm gay, and not get thrown out of school or fired from your job very easily. It was a lot different then. If someone knew you were gay when I was a kid and growing up in Manhattan in the early 60s, you could get beat up or thrown out of your house by your parents. That was very common.
Oh, gosh. And you came out at 14, right? Which is pretty remarkable.
I knew I was. Yeah, I was lucky. My parents were, even though they were kind of, you know, traditional on that stuff, they always made sure, like, they were taking care of me, and they would say, you know, we want you to go to a concert or go to a theater or go to a movie or take an extra class. They wanted me to be involved in the world, and that made a big difference.
A very good relationship with your parents, other than the fact that they thought you had mental illness. I don't know. That was very accepting of you to accept such a thing. But so what helps you find clarity at such a young age? I mean, because I think that sometimes, I don't know, kids that age, I'm not even sure. I guess I don't really know the answer to the question. But do they even know at that age? Are they really even sure what they like sexually?
I don't know that they do.
That's the age when you do start to develop sexual feelings, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And I just, you know, I made it a point to kind of own it and not be ashamed of it. I feel like the best, I feel like today, the kids are so much more aware of every part of their life, and they're not in denial, you know, and I think it helps.
Some,
say,
yeah. I mean, well, I also think that it does, I think that it, a good part of, you know, it's interesting because, you know, it, I mean, it, it's clear that you had a good relationship, or it appears to be that you had a good relationship with your parents, and when you have that solid base, I think it makes it easier. Although it is a little, I do feel a little conflicted when you say that your mother said that, you know, you had mental illness and you need to see a psychiatrist. So to me, that doesn't sound particularly accepting. But I guess, how many years ago was that?
Yeah, this was 1967, which is 60-something. I'm 72 now, so that would have been 62, 59 years ago. Mm-hmm. But I'll tell you this, for just to have an vantage point, that was the year, 67, that CBS News produced a one-hour doc call, in prime time, called The Homosexuals. And in that documentary, Mike Wallace is saying things like, you know, the homosexual is mentally ill and will live a life of misery. And this is in the friggin' documentary. I couldn't believe it. So, and this is where she's getting her information.
Well,
you know?
Okay, then. All right, fair. Yeah. That's fair enough.
It was,
that's fair
the
enough.
World was so
So
different.
Was the rest of your family's reaction similar to your... What about your father? You didn't say anything about your father. And I'm curious
he
about
He was
that.
Actually... Well, he was more... He was a magazine editor, and he was more open-minded, I think, than my mom was. And I remember he said to me on the phone when she told him what I told her, he said, son, your mom tells me you have a problem, and we're going to get you some help. Like I'm a murderer or something.
Yeah, but still, even think about it, that they weren't enraged about it. They were just concerned that you had this problem based on the way society looked at homosexuality in those days. I think we're about to take a break, huh, Quinn? Yeah? He's looking at us. Quinn, do we need a break? Oh, we don't? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought... Okay. All right.
He wanted to make sure I was looking. They thought I would never work again. I wouldn't be able to get a job.
So he was more concerned about his son's future rather than your disgrace to the...
Exactly.
And that, you know what? And that is a big difference, is it not, right? So, because it's one thing to be like, you ought to be ashamed of yourself versus, this behavior is not going to help you get through your life. It's going to make your life more difficult. You know what it reminds me of? A young girl who's maybe 16, 17 years old, and, you know, you could have two different situations where one parent or parents, one set of parents are like, you know, we have to hide you. You should be ashamed of yourself. And how dare you have had sex before you got married. And the other and the other parents with the pregnant daughter is like, oh, gosh, what can we do? We need to figure out how we can help you. It's going to be really difficult for you at 16 years old to bring a child into this world. You know, and those two different ways of communicating with the child, teen, whatever, it really makes a world of difference on how that person views themselves, right?
A good parent wants that child to feel good about him or herself
and does
not want him to be miserable. I think so. I'm just really lucky. You know, I often tell people, they say, well, where did you get that ridiculous, crazy name for a book, Fairy Boy?
I love it because it's like so out there. It like puts it right out there.
Right?
There is no question what that's about. Right, because in those days, way back in the day, that's what a guy who was gay was a fairy. Right, that's what they call guys back in the day. Right,
65. I switched to a private school. I got a scholarship, and I developed my first crush. And it was on a boy in the eighth grade. It was class president, and who happened to be the son of Betty Friedan, the feminist author. And she had written The Feminist Mystique the year before, and it kind of launched the modern-day women's movement. And And one day on the school bus heading to soccer practice, I heard the guys kind of ribbing him and making fun of him. And I laughed. And he looked over and he said, "Look who's laughing, Fairy Boy himself." And I thought, hey, he figured me out. And I wasn't upset as much as kind of impressed that he noticed me. He was the smartest kid in class and adorable, and I had never had a crush on anybody. But by 13, you know, it started. Like you said, that's kind of the age, I guess. So that's where the name. I was trying to think, what can I call this memory of basically my whole life? The book is two things.
Yeah.
Two things. It's coming out as a, you know, pre-adolescent in New York in the early 60s when the world was so different. And the other part of it is being on television, on the news for 30 years and coming out there too, saying, I can't live a lie. I can't kind of hush-hush who I am. It's not healthy.
No.
And I was lucky. I knew that all the time, and it worked out fine. I actually think it helped my career.
Well, it's just like Ellen DeGeneres, same thing. Right?
It helped. I think it distinguished her from everybody else.
And look at how loved she is. I mean, I don't follow her now, but there was a time, you know, I mean, I don't know all the details.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you hear different things. She was difficult to work with or whatever, but,
yeah,
you know, whatever it is. But she, I do know, I mean, she certainly has a following. But anyway, Garrett, we are going to take a short break. When we come back, in your book, you talked about being outed, and I'd like you to share a bit about how that shaped your experience as a teen. So listeners, got a great story going here, so don't go anywhere.
Don't touch that dial. More of the Francesca Luca Show comes your way next.
HM Auto Detailing handles entire fleets of vehicles for local businesses, and they're ready to make your car, truck, or SUV shine like new. Do you stare at that spill from when your coffee got away? Are you sad about the bag of groceries that toppled and stained? Maybe the kid's last food fight left war wounds in your vehicle, or it just might be time for a good cleaning. Get a fresh start with HM Auto Detailing. Same day service, over 10 years experience, they even detail boats and aircraft. Call HM Auto Detailing today, 781-738-3301, 781-738-3301. HM Auto Detailing, 156 Union Street in Rockland.
Tired of looking tired? Noticing the signs of aging? Fine lines, dull skin, or lost volume getting you down? Aliette Aesthetics will help you turn back the clock naturally. Whether it's a lifting and tightening, PDO thread treatment, wrinkle-smoothing neurotoxins, or collagen-boosting PRP therapy, Aliette Aesthetics has the treatments to restore your youthful glow. As someone who's been in your shoes, I trusted Aliette Aesthetics to refresh my look, and now it's your turn. Rediscover radiant, youthful skin, because you deserve to look as vibrant as you feel. Visit Aliette Aesthetics today and start your journey to the best version of you.
You need help around the house. You need a handyman. How do you find just the one you're looking for? Go to locally owned and operated HandymanConnection.com. Handyman Connection puts you in touch with one of their carefully screened and background-checked craftsmen. You get the best help around for maintenance, installation, and remodeling services, carpentry, tiling, and flooring, and assistance with aging-in-place upgrades to your home. Handyman Connection also provides you with free in-home estimates and a one-year written warranty on labor from one of their experienced professionals. Call 781-829-3030. Or visit HandymanConnection.com. Your connection to quality craftsmen on the South Shore. One call, one connection.
Now, for more of the Francesca Luca Show on 95.9 WATD.
All right, we are back, and I'm speaking with Garrett Glaser. He's a man whose story stretches far beyond headlines and sound bites. He's a groundbreaking journalist, Emmy-winning correspondent, media insider, and now author of the powerful memoir, Fairy Boy, of which we are talking about. So big welcome back to you, Garrett. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Francesca.
All right. Thank your book, you talked about being outed. Can you share a bit about how that shaped your experience?
Amazing. My dad was married several times, and his third wife was a woman named Muriel Glaser, and she owned a fancy store in New York, and she was kind of a leader in stationery and had very expensive things in there for rich people to buy for their desks. And she had made a reputation for herself. And she was very stylish, wore beautiful clothes, but she was a bad alcoholic. And when she got drunk, she was extremely mean. Christmas Day, 1967, I'm 14, I go to their annual Christmas party in their house. And it was mostly for Jewish people, but they had it every year, and it was a really nice party. And that day, he got very drunk, and in the middle of the party, started screaming at me from across the room, "Garrett, you are a fag. You don't know it yet, but I do," and started screaming like that. And people were embarrassed, of course, and looking away, but it just got worse and worse. And I remember being kind of traumatized by it.
Oh, sure.
And I had to, you know, decide early, like, you know what, I noticed what I did. I just kind of sat there and took it, and I didn't get into it with her. And I wish now I had done something, but I just didn't want confrontation then. But that came at the same time as I kind of, I was discovering myself. And that's when I developed that crush, and I said, gosh, I guess I am gay, you know? And it all kind of happened at the same time.
And how did you feel when you found, when you realized that, when you said, I guess I am gay, what did that feel like to you?
I thought, I wonder if I really am. I wonder why this is. I wonder if it's as bad as people say. It sure feels natural to me. And having a crush on someone of the same sex versus a different sex, it just felt natural. And sure enough, I was blessed in my new school. I had a couple of teachers who I could tell were gay like me. And they took me under their wing and were mentors to me for 5 years and kind of said, you know, this is how things work, and you better be a responsible, moral, and ethical person. So I'm a bit, you know, the book is kind of like the importance of mentors, and they made such a difference on me. I just hope that kids today have mentors who kind of say, this is how the world works, and you need to do the right thing. And just because you're gay and disliked by some doesn't mean you can act like a jerk.
I mean, listen, all of us, people like us and don't like us, not just, you know, it isn't just
right.
It isn't just reserved for the gay. All right, so you know, you mentioned performers like Liberace and Mary Martin having a big influence, again, mentors. What did that mean to you at the time?
Well, my folks took my sister and I to a live performance of Peter Pan with Mary Martin, and that was actually a rehearsal for the TV show. I think it was 60, and they had like 5 years of it, and it was, so they would rehearse because it was live on the air on a certain day. And we went, and I remember, and I was six, and I remember thinking, how can a girl be a boy? It's Mary Martin, who's a girl, but she plays Peter Pan, who's a boy. Mm-hmm. And so after the show was over, she took questions from the audience in the theater, and I put up my hand and said, I have a question. How can a girl be a boy?
Ooh.
And people giggled, you know, and laughed, and she said something very funny. She says, oh, I know a few who are girls who are boys. And I had no idea what she was talking about. You know, I just thought she was being funny. Everybody laughed. But I remembered it for the rest of my life, that moment. And it was a wonderful show, and she was a wonderful performer. And it happened again a couple of times later where I just kind of did not run away from my curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I grew up, and I've been doing crime news at ABC and elsewhere in the 80s. And one day I said, I don't think I can do it anymore. I can't cover crime so much. It's getting depressing. So they said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to cover television and entertainment because I think it's so interesting.
Mm.
So they said, okay. They said, give it a try. And so I did. And all of a sudden, I was interviewing, you know, very famous people who, most of whom were really smart and really interesting and good people. There were a few idiots along the way, but not mostly. And so for, well, a 30-year career, I'd say 20 or 15 to 20 of it was interviewing people in the entertainment industry.
Much more interesting, huh? Yeah, much more. Sounds like it would be much more up your alley, right?
I like it so much more. And, you know, if you cover crime too much, it's sad. Yeah, it is sad.
It is, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you've, you know, I mean, you're way out in San Diego, so you likely aren't following, although it's, you know, everyone knows about it, like the Karen Reed trial.
It's
interesting, and then it just, well, it gets to be so old, and it's depressing, too, you know,
yes.
And it gets kind of crazy, you know, so.
I'll hear a story about some terrible thing that someone did, and I'll say to myself, what happened in that person's childhood that they turned into such a crazy person, a criminal? And I always wonder, you know, you don't know usually. They don't tell you too much about the early days, but I always am curious
about
it.
Well, of course. I mean, because that's your childhood shape, you know, it shapes everything.
Garrett,
was there a story or moment from your early life that was tough to revisit, but you felt you needed to, that you needed to be in your book?
Yeah, oh boy, that's a good question. I think the pressure of knowing that this was going to come out and that you need to be honest about who you are, you know, there are painful moments in life, and you don't always want to live them again, you know, but I just knew I had to be open and honest and not cover up who I was, and that made a difference. And also, I'll give you one. I was in Virginia Beach, Virginia once, doing a series for a TV station on free speech. And I remember interviewing a Pentecostal minister in Virginia Beach who said to me during the interview, you know, son, the Lord says all homosexuals must be killed. And I support that. And I'm thinking, what do I say to this guy? And the cameraman looked at me, and I looked at him, and we're like, well, we got the soundbite we need. He sounds crazy. Now let's get out of here. And we did. We left. And I was, you know, uncomfortable, but I didn't confront. And I just said, thank you for your opinions. I really appreciate it. And we left.
Wow.
And we had what we needed for our series. But I'll always remember it. And here's the scary part. He was kind of likable, you know?
Well, I mean, you can be likable and judgmental, too, I guess. You know, people are made up of many fabrics, right? You know, there's actually a book called There's a Part of Me, and that's because we have so many different parts, I know, you know.
It's so true.
Right. So when you started out, did it ever seem possible to be openly gay on television?
Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, there was Confidential magazine was around, and it would routinely out entertainers in the meanest possible way. So Liberace, Tab Hunter, Gore Vidal, others, they would say terrible things about them. And sometimes they would sue. They would sue the magazine and win. But it had a huge circulation, and people were curious about it and wanted to read about private lives.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just in a million years thought I would never be able to tell anyone. Mm-hmm. And yet, got a job at CBS News in the research library, and three of the other employees were gay men. So I thought, well, we're here. You know, you can't tell people, but we're here. And wherever I went to work around the country, 30 years in TV news, usually in most newsrooms, you'd find at least one gay person. And you know what I often say to people? It wasn't that people in the news were anti-gay. It was that they were gay ignorant.
Mm,
they
right.
didn't know how to react because they didn't think they knew anyone gay. And That's why they were so insecure. They were homo ignorant.
Yeah.
But the vast majority were okay about it. I think most people are okay with it. Yeah, if you're really bothered by it, what does that say about your own life, you know?
If you're really bothered by it, you probably should go under a rock or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that movie Birdcage with Robin Williams? Did you see it?
Yeah.
That was a great, great movie. And
wasn't
how he
it?
Was so... you know, awkward, and yet his partner was just right. And in the end, how, you know, he forced him to come out. It was just, I don't know, I just love those kinds of whatever coming out is, what, you know, whatever it might be, just being coming out of whatever, so that you could be who you truly are. And, and so you came out publicly in the 90s while reporting.
NBC, what happened was the L.A. Times did a thing saying this guy is gay. This TV reporter is one of the few openly gay ones.
Yeah.
So that was in the paper. So I thought, oh, okay. Well, I come into work about a month later, and the president of KNBC Channel 4 in L.A. calls me into her office, and she says, Garrett, you're coming out today. And I said, what do you mean? She says, on the air, you're coming out today. I said, why? Well, it turns out the Times had a thing, is he out yet? It was like laser watch, is he out yet? And I think NBC got tired of the ribbing. And so they said, well, let's own it. Let's get in front of it. Let's have him come out today. And I said, well, if I come out, how am I going to, in the middle of my reports on entertainment, I'm just going to say that out of nowhere?
Hey, and by the way.
No, it's that she said, who's in your segment today? And I said, well, I'm doing a thing on this. And then I said, I'm doing an obit on Elizabeth Glazer from Pediatric AIDS Foundation. She had just died. And the president of the station said to me, that's what you'll do. Mention it in your obituary of Elizabeth Glazer. So I did. And
why? What's the connection between? Well, wait a minute, Quinn's saying we need to take a break. But when we come back, okay. So hold that thought. What is the connection between coming out and an obituary? That I'm very curious about.
You bet.
Okay, listeners, stay with us here.
Don't touch that dial. More of the Francesca Luca Show comes your way next. Oh gosh, Debbie, my new puppy is pulling me in a million different directions. One day it's off to the groomers, the next it's the trainer. Between that and my job, my head is spinning.
Oh, Quinn, it sounds like you need a one-stop shop for all your pet care needs.
That is exactly what I need.
Well, then you should come down and see me and my team at Doggy Works. We offer daily dog daycare, walking, training, and grooming all from one spot. We've got all the services you need to give your dog the best care it can get, all under one roof.
That sounds amazing. Where can I find you?
It's easy. We're located right on Route 14 in Pembroke, and we're open 12 hours a day, Monday to Friday. And if you can't make it during the week, we're by appointment for grooming and training on Saturdays, too. Your dog deserves the absolute best, so check us out at DoggyWorksLLC.com or call us at 781-754-0329.
HM Auto Detailing handles entire fleets of vehicles for local businesses, and they're ready to make your car, truck, or SUV shine like new. Do you stare at that spill from when your coffee got away? Are you sad about the bag of groceries that toppled and stained? Maybe the kid's last food fight left war wounds in your vehicle. Or it just might be time for a good cleaning. Get a fresh start with HM Auto Detailing. Same day service, over 10 years experience, they even detail boats and aircraft. Call HM Auto Detailing today, 781-738-3301. 781-738-3301. HM Auto Detailing, 156 Union Street in Rockland.
Tired of looking tired? Noticing the signs of aging? Fine lines, dull skin, or lost volume getting you down? Aliette Aesthetics will help you turn back the clock naturally. Whether it's a lifting and tightening, PDO thread treatment, wrinkle-smoothing neurotoxins, or collagen-boosting PRP therapy, Aliette Aesthetics has the treatments to restore your youthful glow. As someone who's been in your shoes, I trusted Aliette Aesthetics to refresh my look, and now it's your turn. Rediscover radiant, youthful skin, because you deserve to look as vibrant as you feel. Visit Aliette Aesthetics today and start your journey to the best version of you.
Now, for more of the Francesca Luca Show on 95.9 WATD.
All right, we are back, and I'm speaking with Garrett Glaser, and we are talking about the power of being seen. Welcome back, Garrett.
Thanks, Francesca.
Okay,
what
so
I was gonna
the connection between coming out and obituaries. I thought that was, did I miss something there?
The president of the station said, she said, you need some legitimate connection between the news of the day and coming out. And I said, well, I'm reading an obituary about this AIDS activist, a straight woman, who mainstreamed awareness of AIDS way back when. And I said, you know, I was very grateful to her. As a gay man who's lost a lot of friends to AIDS, I am very grateful to Elizabeth Glaser for what she did. So that was a way to work it in, and that's what we did, and that was on the air to 250,000 people in 5 in the afternoon. You know, a few people called nasty, but almost everybody called in and said, I think it's great you're honest. And that's how most people
work. So actually, would you say that that helped your career?
Absolutely. You know why? It distinguished me. It differentiated me from hundreds of TV guys around the country. Or, you know, men and women. I was different. And I think it's, I just wrote a press release about, someone said, what's the takeaway from Fairy Boy? And I said, the takeaway is be honest about yourself. Mm-hmm. Own who you are. Even if you have things seen as negative, be open. Mm-hmm. Tell people you're working on it, you know? Don't hide who you are. There's never a good reason to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of the time, people are sympathetic. If you open up and you're honest, they'll respect it, I think.
I think so. I think so. Some of them might be uncomfortable, right? So, but you know what? You covered a lot of major stories, and you interviewed some really intense people. What are a few interviews that really stuck with you?
Oh, my. I remember interviewing Charles Manson in prison.
Oh.
E.T. I was working at E.T. in L.A., and they said, hey, it's 30 years, I think it was 30 years, since the Manson murders, and go up to this prison, and, you know, he'll only do one interview when he's chosen us at E.T., and even though he's a mass murderer, he is very well known, and so we went up and just talked to him, and he was loopy, he was so insane, but you could look in his eyes and tell he was insane, but he got real angry during the interview, and when I said, is it true that you mistook who was in the house that you attacked and your people attacked? And he said, like who? And I said, well, did you think that Doris Day's son, Terry Melcher, record producer who had rejected you, your work, were you really angry at him? Well, he freaked out. He said, he don't mean nothing to me. And he started screaming, you know, and just...
Were you scared?
Well, luckily, they had him in shackles. His wrists were shackled to his ankles. Mm-hmm. And so he wasn't going anywhere. But, yeah, they had two guards on either side of him. Mm-hmm. So when he jumped up and went crazy, he couldn't get very far. But I could tell this guy was out of his mind. I mean, although it's funny, a year ago I asked Larry Fleece, who was the field producer on the piece, I said, hey, Larry, did you think, as I did, that he was just really nuts? And he says, no, I think he was doing shtick. I think he was playing it up.
Oh.
So really? I didn't get that. Oh. And one weird thing that happened was that I thought we had rolled about 8 minutes of tape on him, mm-hmm. and it turned out to be 18 minutes, and I had been I felt hypnotized.
Oh, wow.
And I lost track of the time.
Wow.
And it has never happened before or after that.
Did you
go
ahead.
I just think he had some strange power. His eyes were strange, you know. Pupils would reverse, reverse circles. It was creepy.
I imagine that was a lot to process.
It was, I think it was. Another time I was working in Miami for the ABC affiliate, Channel 10 Eyewitness, and they sent me to Haiti because the story had come out in the Miami News the day before that Duvalier, the dictator, a terrible man, had started locking up anyone thought to be gay in Haiti. And he said, yeah, you're spreading AIDS, and you got to lock them up in prison. So they sent me down there, and, you know, it was so poor and so awful. And he treated those people terribly. And I remember we worked 36 hours straight and got what we could. And I never forgot seeing that kind of poverty and abuse of a population. And it stayed with me forever because it was a lot poorer than Central America or South America. Or, you know, they had nothing. They had no roads. They had no water. They had nothing. And he was so awful to them. And I just remember thinking, I'm so glad I live in the USA. I really was.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I just want to shift here that and talk a little bit about that you've done a lot to push for the better for LGBTQ and visibility in media. What inspired you to take on that role?
Because I thought I was in a good position to make a case. I guess it's a little messed up, but when I would see spokespeople for the movement in the mass media, if they weren't well-spoken, I'd think, oh, this is not helping us. So I thought, well, I'm well-spoken. I can make the case. And so occasionally I would do stuff. And sometimes it was, you know, I didn't necessarily publicize it a lot, but I worked on behalf of gay people with several nonprofits. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad I did, you know. I felt like we needed the help. Mm-hmm. And I wanted people to know that most of us were good people. And I'm glad I did.
Your dad worked on The Boys in the Band, right? How did that influence your own views on representation and storytelling?
He was someone who used to tell fag jokes, okay? So he didn't think of that as ugly. Back then, it was accepted. And so he was hardly of a high consciousness on gay stuff. But he was working for a movie company, and they were responsible for advertising, promotion, and publicity when it came out. And he helped to design an ad in the paper for the movie. And later, that ad campaign was criticized by gay people for being anti-gay. And so I didn't think so, but, you know, people were more radical after a while. And so I remember talking to him about it and saying, were you aware that this was going to be offensive to some people? He said, no, we really weren't. We thought we were doing a great job. We didn't realize what could have offended. Just like today, you hear stuff where people are clueless, you know. Yes. And I don't think he really didn't dislike gay people. You know what he disliked? He didn't like people who were weak, ineffectual, secretive.
Yep.
He liked people. I mean, their favorite writers of they had were like some gay writers because they were good, strong writers. Mm-hmm. Like Corvidal or people like that.
Right.
So, you know, it's a small world is what it is. It's a small world.
So in looking back, what do you think were some big turning points about the LGBTQ plus and visibility in media or culture?
One huge thing, the biggest thing, they always talk about the Stonewall riots in 69.
Right, yeah.
Well, I have seen newspaper articles and magazine articles about being gay in the early 60s versus after Stonewall. And it was shockingly different after the riots. And all of a sudden, you could talk about things. You didn't have to hide it. And that made a huge difference in what could be discussed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really glad that it happened when I was young, because by then you could see it was changing. But when I was little, I mean, if someone knew you were gay, you'd be fired right away.
Oh,
you know?
Right, right.
I mean, that's how it was.
Yep. Has writing Fairy Boy changed the way you see your own place in the bigger story?
That's an interesting question. Well, I'll tell you, it's not that it really has. It's that I thought I better write this memoir because my memory's going. I'm 72. I have MS. I have MS, but I can still walk.
Oh, okay.
I thought, you got to write this stuff down before you forget it. So I started 10 years ago writing down all these stories, and all of a sudden, we had a book. And it's been really cathartic, you know. It's been really good.
Always. Writing is.
Writing
is. Right? Writing is.
I had so many friends who've been so supportive. There's the occasional nasty person I'll come across, but very rarely.
Right.
What's it like up where you are? Do you think people have come a long way on this stuff?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think like where you are necessarily. I mean, you know. New England's a little provincial still, you know.
Yeah. We moved up to Portland, Maine after COVID, and it was a little provincial, but we loved it.
Portland, Maine, that's great, yeah.
Oh, food, oh, golly. But it was cold, and we heard about San Diego, came out here, found a place to live, and liked it, and we're very happy out here. But a lot of the family's still back in Mass, you know, but we love it. And we see people more often. They all want to come out here and visit us.
Right. All right. When we return, what life's like after the cameras stop rolling, Garrett opens up about his present, his pride, and what he hopes for the future. Coming up next, don't go anywhere.
Don't touch that dial. More of the Francesca Luca Show comes your way next.
You need help around the house. You need a handyman. How do you find just the one you're looking for? Go to locally owned and operated HandymanConnection.com. Handyman Connection puts you in touch with one of their carefully screened and background-checked craftsmen. You get the best help around for maintenance, installation, and remodeling services, carpentry, tiling, and flooring, and assistance with aging-in-place upgrades to your home. Handyman Connection also provides you with free in-home estimates and a one-year written warranty on labor from one of their experienced professionals. Call 781-829-3030 or visit HandymanConnection.com. Your connection to quality craftsmen on the South Shore. One call, one connection.
Need a reliable place for your pet? Does your dog crave extra stimulation instead of social isolation? Sign up for doggy daycare at the Dog's Den in Pembroke. With two separate yards and plenty of supervision, your dog will have a ball and tug-of-war toys and plenty of new friends. The Dog's Den also specializes in grooming. Each groomer at the Dog's Den has decades of experience and will leave your furry friend refreshed and ready for their next adventure. Schedule your grooming or daycare today at thedogsdengrooming.com.
Now, for more of the Francesca Luca Show on 95.9 WATD.
All right, we are back, and I'm speaking with Garrett Glazer. Welcome back, Garrett.
Hey, thanks, Francesca.
All right, this is really a lot of fun. So, the title Fairy Boy, obviously, it really stands out. Tell us why you chose it.
Because when I was a young guy, I thought, what was the biggest thing I could remember about gay stuff, and it was having my first crush on a guy who called me Fairy Boy one day.
Right.
And I thought, that's probably a good name for the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of, you know, gets your attention. You know what I didn't realize? These days, when you do a book, you need to do it in hardcover, softcover, ebook, like Kindle, an audio book like Audible,
right.
And so that's what we did. We did four versions, so it's a much bigger deal than it used to be, I think.
Sure.
Some people, I have friends who say, oh, I'll never pick up a book. It has to be on tape. And then other people say, oh, I only want to read a book. I never would listen to it. It's
oh, yeah,
so
me
funny,
too.
You
yeah,
know?
No, no. I've got to be able to feel that book. I've got to be able to turn the page.
Yeah.
I don't know. But that's my age, I think. I don't know. I can't imagine reading a book on Kindle or listening to books on tape isn't bad. But I do feel that it's easy to get distracted when you're listening to a book on tape.
You're, You're right about that. I noticed that, too. Could be because I'm 72, maybe. But
well, could be because I have ADD.
you know, young kids, they seem to have no trouble. Do you find I'm getting slower on the computer? Do you find that?
No, not yet. No, actually, I'm... Okay. No, I don't think so. Not quite yet, because I'm on it all the time. But and you probably are, too. But no, knock on wood. I'm knocking on my head right now, because I think it's made of wood. But anyway, were there any stories you were hesitant to share at first but decided to include anyway?
Yes, I had a problem with doing stories, honestly, about behaviors in gay men that I didn't think were healthy, like gay men who continued to have unsafe sex when AIDS came, and sometimes quite a lot of it, and they were not interested in being responsible. They would go to the educational sessions about how to have safe sex, and I would hear, oh, they're not doing it. They're not actually changing. So this, I would think, God, that's a bad story, makes us look bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very hesitant. And occasionally when I did those stories, I would get attacked by the more radical elements. You know, let me ask you a question. I mean, I'm assuming you're a straight woman. What do you make of the whole trans explosion? My feeling is the leadership of the trans movement was pushing too hard, too fast, and it made people crazy, and they elected Trump. And I just wish that they had gone a little easier, because it's hard for people to accept change.
It is hard for people to accept change, for sure. You know, I mean, that's just across the board in anything in general in life. And, you know, I remember many years ago, I had a friend who had come from a very, very disturbed home life situation. And I'll never forget him saying, you know, and he worked very, very hard at you know, dealing with the dysfunction and the toxicity. And he said, you know, it's like a baby with one of those mobiles, right? Like, you know, how they come. He said, you take one piece off, right? Or you move one of the, right? And then the whole mobile just kind of goes off crazy. You know, it doesn't really, right? It can't function because of that one piece that's changed. Yeah. And I think in general, I think that's human nature. You know, I think that, right. I think that, I think it's the way it is. But we are running out of time. How much Quinn, how much time do we have left? 5 minutes, 6 minutes. Okay, good. Okay. I wanted to ask you now, what does life look like now these days, now that you've stepped away from the newsroom?
Well, I do a lot of things. I volunteer to teach people who don't speak English the basics of speaking English, or ESL, English as a Second Language.
Mm-hmm.
I do write stuff, political opinion stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I do pro bono stuff as far as journalism and helping educate young people about what's right and not right in journalism, and to make sure your practices professionally are responsible. And that keeps me plugged in, and it makes me feel like I'm doing something. I've been settled down with the same guy for 25 years. So he does his film festival volunteer work, and I do my journalism volunteer work.
Both artists,
We're happy, you know. We're disgustingly happy. What can you do?
Do you have children?
No, zero, but we have lots of nieces and nephews, and I am amazed that parents have as much energy as they do, because kids have so much energy. And, you know, my relatives, some of them have four kids. I don't know how they do that.
Well, having children is a young man's sport, I've always said. So what are you most proud of when you look back on your life and your career?
I think stuff I'm proud of is occasionally I would do 2-3 stories a day for 30 years. Occasionally, when I would get a really good story and I would tell that story and open up people's eyes to something.
Yes.
That's when I felt proud.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I hadn't done the story, they wouldn't know about that, you know?
Right.
And the other thing was, I know that trans people go through a lot of mistreatment,
mm-hmm.
and I just hope that when they lobby for change, they do it gently, so that
mm-hmm,
they can
right.
see it, you know, without getting people crazy. I really think it's important that they be able to be themselves. And they are, you know. Imagine how difficult it is
mm-hmm.
to
That's your
to
mantra,
be trans.
Be yourself, yeah. Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
So would you say to a young person today who might be trying to figure out who they are, again, be yourself and don't be afraid to show your true colors, whatever those colors are.
More important than ever is to show your colors.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the old days, people would lie about who they were, and it was kind of forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it is forgiven today. I think young folks hate that when they see it. And I'm just so grateful we can be open.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so grateful you're spending time talking about this.
Well, I'm so grateful
today.
That
it's
you're
great.
Sharing your story. I want to thank you for joining us and sharing your incredible
sure.
journey from the early days in New York to your years in broadcast journalism and beyond. Your story really reminds us how powerful it is to live honestly and speak your truth, even when it's not easy. So, listeners, Garrett's memoir, Fairy Boy, is available now. It's heartfelt, it's bold, and it's full of stories that stay with you long after the last page. If you'd like to learn more about Garrett and his career, you can find him on Wikipedia. So, Garrett, thanks again for joining us tonight on the Francesca Luca Show. It's really been eye-opening and such a real true pleasure.
Oh, you're so kind, Francesca, to say that. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks again. All right. We've got to wrap things up and say goodnight. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you missed part of the show, you'll want to hop on over to my iTunes page and listen there. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And I would love it if you would leave an interview. See you next week.
Agora tá chorando pelo que perdeu.